Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really awesome founder, a founder that has done it multiple times. You know, we're going to be really navigating and diving into, you know, the whole thing about the building, the scaling, you know, financing and exiting. You know, in this case, he's done a couple of exits and now he's on his latest journey, you know, which has to do with open source and all of that good stuff. So again, without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, David Young. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. It's great to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Originally born and raised in Dallas, Texas. Give us a walk through memory lane. David, how was life growing up for you?
I love Texas. I was born there. I'm a Cowboys fan, so, you know, full Texan. I was recently there with my wife, and we went to this shitty apartment building where I used to live when I was a baby. And my mom used to tell me all these crazy stories. So I'm glad I got out of there alive. But Texas is a great place. I mean, there's so many great entrepreneurs and it's just sort of a culture because it's the West, right? And it's where people go. They go out from the very beginning of the history of the state to sort of find opportunities. So that's really sort of the culture I grew up in as a Texan.
Now, in your case, you know, like you went to school and out of all things, ancient Greek, you know, it's kind of like completely different from any of the stuff that you did or that you're doing nowadays.
Yeah, so that's right. When I went to university, I went to Indiana University and my field of major was not computer science. It wasn't a pre-major or something like this. It was ancient Greek. It was classics. And I really stand by that decision. I feel that today, one of the things that's missing in our sort of technological culture is a lack of understanding of what went on before us and the sort of depth of understanding and knowledge that people had in the ancient world. And one of the best ways to come in contact with this knowledge is through learning the language. And so I did a very intensive study of Greek and Latin, did a bunch of study on a Greek poet called Pindar. And I think that's really stood me well. I mean, you can always go and become an engineer, learn the sort of principles of software engineering, pick those up pretty easily. It takes a lot of hard work, there's no question. But having that classics background has really helped me as a writer, as a thinker, as someone that sort of is interested in new ideas and the opportunities that these new ideas bring.
So for you, you know, you ended up going to Wall Street, which again, you know, didn't really serve the entrepreneurial drive that you have and that you've been really pushing on. But after that, you know, you ended up getting going, you know, with tech startups, which was the segue for you to becoming an entrepreneur. I mean, that's quite a shift and a change of gears, going from Wall Street to all of a sudden entering the tech world and working for some of those more risky, you know, type of endeavors. So how was that shift like for you?
Well, you're right. I went to Wall Street, you know, coming out of a classics background. I had been accepted into a PhD program, and I was thinking of going to this PhD program at a really good school. But the head of the program said, you know, you may want to look around and see what else is available, because we don't make a lot of money as professors in ancient Greek. So I was recruited to this bank. And at the bank, Wall Street at the time, they invested a lot of money in tech startups. Believe it or not, Wall Street saw technology as a game changer, as a differentiator for each bank. And in fact, Goldman Sachs at the time was investing a lot of money in a little company called Next Computer. And they used Next Computer and Next Step and the different tools that are on Next and Next Step to sort of differentiate their trading practices. And so there was a real culture within Wall Street of sort of figuring out how to use technology to differentiate your business. And I was part of that sort of culture. But ultimately, you're right. I mean, when you're in a big company you have to play a lot of politics. And so I had some ideas. I had a couple friends on the West Coast that were working on some startups. And so I ultimately left the bank, left Wall Street, and went out to the Bay Area to work on my first startup.
And the first startup, you know, was quite an outcome, Joyent. So what were the sequence of events that needed to happen for you guys to bring Joyent to life?
Well, actually, the first startup was a failure. It wasn't Joyent. Joyent was the next one. The first one was a little company called ManageStar. And we were a SaaS company that was trying to help construction and other sort of task management. It was early days, learned a lot of stuff. We grew to, you know, about 100 people. I was the CTO there. And as I said, you learn a lot of things. We had a great founding team, but we just weren't able to sort of make it work. And I remember sitting in a hotel room up in Seattle, having seen a big customer of ours and sort of thinking, you know, this may be coming to an end. It would be great to start to work on another project that I had in mind. But at the time, it was really, really difficult to sort of get all the infrastructure you needed for your startup. You had to go rack and stack a bunch of servers in a data center. You had to buy a really expensive database, maybe from Sybase or Oracle or one of these things, get a database administrator, all this stuff. And I began to think, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could sort of figure out a way to use some of the emerging open source tools and sort of stitch those together so someone could go to a website and buy a data center sort of on a subscription basis. Now, we think of this as cloud now, but we've sort of called it data center on demand. And, you know, I and a couple of the founding engineers put this together. We started and, you know, we found real success. It's also true in those early days as we went out to companies and said, hey, we've got this new idea where you can go to a website. Nothing existed. There was no Amazon. There was no Google Cloud. There was nowhere you could go. But we said, you can go to this website and you can spin up this data center. And most people told us at the time that we were crazy. They would never, ever. They liked sort of holding onto their server, holding onto their, you know, their infrastructure. They would never, ever use our service. But we were very lucky because at Joyent, we sort of got in with what was at the time called the Web 2.0 crowd. This was where the old sort of way of doing SaaS and original sort of Web 1 was being transformed by a lot of entrepreneurs who were looking for ways to move fast, really sort of create these user-generated content-based services and move fast, sort of try things out. If it worked, it worked well. If it didn't, it didn't. And sort of data center as a service, what became known as cloud or infrastructure as a service, we were at the right place at the right time. And as you said, it worked out really well for us. We ended up having just some tremendous early customers like Twitter and Tumblr and the Facebook Developer Program, lots and lots of different sort of growing customers that were looking to sort of innovate on top of a data center as a service platform. And we ended up selling that company to Samsung. And if you use a Samsung phone or a mobile device today, you're probably hitting a Joyent back end.
That's amazing. Talk about impact. Now, for you, obviously, Joyent was your first rodeo more on the CEO role. So I think that going from the technical side, like you were in your first rodeo that, you know, as they say, you either succeed or you learn. So in that first rodeo that you were alluding to, you learned, you know, what, you know, worked and what didn't to apply it to Joyent, which ended up having a nice outcome. Now, on your first rodeo, you were more on the CTO side, more technical. On the second one with Joyent, more at the CEO helm, more on the business side of things. How was that transition going from the technical side to the business side like that?
Well, I found, and this is something that I had to learn about myself, I found that as a CEO, I really, really like developing product. My favorite parts of a startup, and I've been part of or either involved in a bunch of different startups, my favorite part is when you're just sort of sitting there, you're with a white canvas, you're getting those sort of initial customers that come on board and enjoy the product. But you're right, at Joyent, we ended up growing. I was the first CEO there. We ended up growing to just past 500 people. So we had tremendous growth. And you sort of go from, Alejandro, knowing everyone in the office, being able to everyone be able to sit around a table at a Mexican restaurant and have a bunch of fun, to sort of like running into people in the office and wondering, you know, is this a customer? Is this a colleague? You know, what's going on here? And that was a tough thing. You know, I've been very open about my time at Joyent. And, you know, when we ended up selling Joyent to Samsung, I wrote a pretty long description of the time at Joyent. One of the things that I learned is, you know, it's really easy to sort of get sidetracked into, you know, things that aren't really great sort of builders for the business itself. I'm talking about things like, you know, substance abuse and all these sorts of things. We don't have to make this into an Alcoholics Anonymous session, but, you know, there's all sorts of stuff you learn about yourself. Luckily, I was very fortunate at Joyent to have really good people around me, you know, people that I really trusted, that I could really sort of be very, very clear about the challenges I was facing as a founder and as a CEO, you know, both among my investors, but also among my colleagues at the company. And it doesn't mean that I was perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'm sure there are tons of stories out there where David Young was not perfect. But I can say this with honesty, I tried very much to be as perfect as I could. And if I couldn't, I tried every day to be a little bit better. And, you know, one of the things that we did at Joyent was to help people sort of figure out how they could day by day be a little bit better, you know, a little bit, you know, progress, not perfection. Because it's very easy in a startup, especially when things are going well, to sort of say, well, you know, we only have to be about perfection. We can only talk about the things that are going well. And in fact, in a startup, what I found is most things don't go well. You know, you're mostly dealing with a lot of problems, a lot of crises, and you sort of have to learn to be sanguine, learn to be sort of able to deal with those things, look at them honestly, without emotion, without ego. And this is something that I really continued to learn while I was at Joyent.
So during your time at Joyent, also before the exit, you guys raised quite a bit of money too, $120 million. How was, you know, also, you know, your first real rodeo there of leading, you know, capital raisings and going from cycle to cycle. How was that journey too of going through raising all that money?
Yeah, so I was very, very fortunate to have a colleague, Brian Brown, and, you know, he's a good friend of mine. He's now the head of Corp Dev at Brave. And Brian and I were, I would say, very honest with each other as we went through the fundraising process. You know, the fundraising process is an interesting process. We're trying to talk to investors about the potential of the company, the vision of the company, where you've actually made successes, where you haven't made successes, we have more work to do. And so you end up painting a picture for investors that sort of is a process where you educate them about what we were trying to do at Joyent. And I would say without Brian, it would have been a very, very difficult process. And I encourage other entrepreneurs to find their Brian, if you know what I mean. You know, that person that you can be very, very honest about sort of what are the struggles, what are the things that can be done in the fundraising process. And, you know, Brian's this guy, he used to work at the Wall Street Journal. So he's a very good writer, very good communicator. And we used to sort of sit in a room and just go over the process of the pitch and the sort of the message and sort of how we talk about the message. And this was not just for the purposes of fundraising, but the purposes of thinking about the business. And when you have a habit, and I really credit Brian is sort of bringing this to Joyent, when you have this habit of sort of honestly assessing your position, then it leads to sort of a very positive fundraising experience, because then you know sort of how to position the different problems and opportunities that you have in the business. You begin to sort of think about ways that you can, you know, use that money well, both for the investors, but your colleagues at the business, and for customers, because you're raising the money so you can bring a better product, better go-to-market for your company.
Hey, guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired,
you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
I heard you too, you know, as we're talking about people here, you know, the importance of going at it from the get-go with a founding team that has that honesty, you know, and the way that communication happens. Why is that so important?
Well, because it's so easy to be self-deceptive. I mean, and as much as we try as human beings to be honest with ourselves, you know, one of the coping mechanisms, and, you know, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but in my own experience, one of the coping mechanisms we have, especially as entrepreneurs, because this is a very difficult thing that we do, is to sort of be a little bit self-deceptive. Now, having said that, it's important that we have that positive outlook. You know, we're faced constantly when we're in a startup business with lots of challenges. We have these sales projections or things where we want the product to be where it may or may not have made that progress. We have to constantly tell our things that we're going to get there, that, you know, the path through to the top of that mountain or that ridge or that next sort of checkpoint is possible. But many times, you know, we haven't quite made it yet. We have to be positive about that. So having said that, it's important for an entrepreneur to keep that positive outlook and always feel like no matter what the circumstances are, there's a way to get out of it. And at Joyent, we had a number of instances where, you know, we had a big team, we had a big company, and we come down to a couple of weeks of cash left where we really, really have to scramble and get creative to sort of figure out how we're going to make it, you know, how we're going to make a sort of a choke point in the life of this business and get through it. At the same time, you know, if you're always positive, you also need to have that sort of person in your life, that part of the team that is about what's our real position? Where are we really? You know, because if you don't know your real position, you don't know the concrete positive steps you need to take to sort of get to that next position or that next step in the business. So both of these things are really important in my experience. And I've been very, very blessed in my entrepreneurial life to be able to work with people, you know, that have this perspective as well.
So obviously, tremendous outcome. You know, as you were mentioned earlier, you know, the company got acquired by Samsung, and I heard the rumor there on the street is that it was in the hundreds of millions. But how do you go from doing something like that to all of a sudden selling ice cream? I mean, it's kind of quite the turnaround of events here.
Well, yeah, I mean, a successful startup, and I think I'm not just speaking for myself. I've talked to other entrepreneurs that have started software companies, hardware companies, where they've had successful outcomes. They're always brutal, and it just sucks the life out of you. And, you know, my personal story is, and I sort of intimated this, by the end of it, I was really wiped out, and I just didn't want to do anything with cloud computing. And frankly, I think, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, I think most of the innovations in cloud computing started at Joyent. I'm not saying that our competition at Amazon and Google Cloud have continued to innovate but most of the sort of ideas about, you know, microservices, about containers, about the way those things are done, those all came out of joint. So there wasn't really a lot of new work that was able to be done. And so I was really looking for something absolutely different. And I guess with a little bit of arrogance as well, I sort of thought, hey, I was able to get joint done well. I can do just about anything. So sort of like running off to the circus, I decided I would start an ice cream company. Now, the through point here is I love ice cream. And who doesn't love ice cream? And I lived at the time in a place just north of San Francisco called Marin County. And we have a real culture there for dairy and for fine cheese. And so we sort of use this great milk from great Jersey cows to build this amazing ice cream that it was even in a glass container. It looked beautiful on the shelf. It tasted amazing. Savour magazine, which is one of the big gourmet magazines in the United States, sort of picked us as a top ice cream. But guess what, Alejandro? I knew nothing about ice cream. I knew how to sort of build a product. But food, if anyone's listening here, sort of thinking about, hey, I would like to get into food. Food is just an order of magnitude more difficult, in my experience, than doing software or hardware, because you have supply chain, you have distribution, you have all these sorts of things. And after you've done sort of product development, and we had some really great flavors, homemade candies, homemade jams, the whole thing at Honeymoon Ice Cream, but the rest of it is pure grinding execution. And so my partner and I at Honeymoon ended up selling that to an industry insider who sort of took it and they knew what to do with it. So we were happy to be able to exit that company.
So two exits here. So two acquisitions that you had the opportunity of going through. So what can you tell us about what have been perhaps like your top three lessons, you know, about M&A, about selling your business?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, it's not a simple thing. You know, there's the old saying, you know, if you're for sale, then you're not going to be bought. And, you know, you really need to sort of figure out a way to excite the buyer about the possibilities. And, you know, at Joint, it meant great partnerships. You know, we had great partnerships with companies like Sun Microsystems, which is now part of Oracle. We had great partnerships and investments from Intel Capital, from Dell Computer, from big customers like Telefonica. So, you know, those are where your M&A opportunities are going to come from, where you have these big strategic partners that sort of are kicking the tires, sort of figuring out, what is this little business? What do they do? How do they operate? You know, how could I connect that to my business and make it an even bigger opportunity for me at Big Co? And that's what you need to be sensitive to and getting out there to working with those. And there's no real way to fake it. I mean, it's very rare. There are examples, but it's very rare that people make purely sort of emotional decisions on acquisitions. These are big companies with very, very talented teams, and you need to sort of be able to make the case to them even more than you did with your investors that this is a business that's going to blow up when it's combined with their resources and opportunities. So I would say that's really the big insight I have, which is who's going to benefit from sort of the opportunity that my business is bringing to their business.
So for you, it sounds like after the exit, you know, here with the company, essentially you went at it again, you know, after a honeymoon with building another business. But in this case, it was more on the open source, you know, side of things. So again, another shift, you know, to like a completely different direction. But here you are with Federated Computer. So how did the idea of Federated Computer come about? And why did you thought, you know, it was meaningful enough to take action?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I got out of the ice cream business. I was really intending to sort of sit around and, you know, get outside, do some more other sorts of things. But really, this was the time of the COVID pandemic, and I was beginning to sort of notice that privacy was a big concern, that people were beginning to be a little bit upset that their data that is part of SaaS companies, whether it's a big SaaS company like Google Workplace or Zoom or Slack, that this data is used and then disseminated for the purposes of advertising. And then, of course, what came after that, which is training AI, artificial intelligence. And so I wondered, you know, what was the state of some of the open source tools? And as I begin to sort of jump into these tools and get to know the companies like Nextcloud and Jitsi and Baserow and other sorts of things, I was very impressed by the quality of these tools. The problem is, in order to adopt them, a business required an IT professional to sort of stand it up, keep it running, keep it patched, do all the integration. It was a little bit of a mess. And so, again, talking with one of my past collaborators, someone that I really, really trust, I said, what if we put together really a Linux distribution in the cloud, if you will, where we grab a bunch of these different packages, sort of integrate them so it's easy to manage users. And we did all the sort of updates, backups, so that everyone got the experience of really great SaaS software, but without the cost and with the privacy and with the flexibility, sort of full circle. Because now, if you're using open source tools, you can use these tools to fully differentiate your own business. And that's where Federated Computer came from. And it's very exciting because it turns out that the cloud computing industry that I helped start at Joyent is just over $1 trillion in value this year. But the SaaS industry is going to be about $1.5 trillion in value this year. And so we're really attacking an even bigger market. And we think there's tremendous opportunity. These open source tools have tremendous functionality, capability. What was required was a platform like Federated Computer that put it all together and made it super simple for users to adopt the tools.
And what's the business model here with Federated Computer? How do you guys make money?
So instead of a customer, the typical customer using SaaS today is spending about $300 to $400 per user per month for their SaaS software. But with Federated Computer, they get everything included. They get, you know, video conferencing for up to 500 users. They get workplace tools. They get databases. They get all sorts of different things, mailing lists, everything that you'd need to run your business for $120 per month. And we even have cheaper tiers. So you get everything you need for a great, great price. It's absolutely private, completely flexible. So it's a very disruptive, simple model. And it's very much like how it was when we started the cloud, where, you know, our pricing when we started the cloud was very, very disruptive. You didn't have to spend thousands, tens of thousands of dollars up front to get that data center as a service. And the same is true at Federated Computer. There's no need to spend all this money on different SaaS solutions that don't integrate with one another. You come to Federated, everything works together. It's a killer price, and you're off to the races. And you can spend your money now as a business owner on other things like hiring someone else, maybe spending that money on things like marketing your business so you get customers. We think it's a really, really great opportunity for businesses.
So imagine you go to sleep tonight, David, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Federated Computer is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Well, I think because it's open source, you know, in time, there's going to be other people, other Federated Computers, and that's not a problem. You know, just as at Joyent, we were the first to do cloud. We quickly had other clouds out there, and that just validates the vision. But, you know, over time, you know, Federated Computer continues to service and support thousands of customers around the globe. And that's the case today. We continue to sort of get out there, introduce ourselves to customers. And, you know, they really appreciate the price, the value, and the flexibility that they get from Federated Computer.
So we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past and doing so with a lens of reflection as well. So if I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time, maybe to that moment where you were jumping from one tech startup to the other one, and let's say now you had the opportunity of being right there with that younger David before going at it with the first founded company. And you could give that younger David one piece of advice before launching a business, given what you know now, what would that be and why?
You know, I don't really have many regrets. It's not to say that I don't have mistakes that I've made. But, you know, I think the key thing that I would say to myself is be even more insistent on, you know, trying new things. And, you know, there's no way that you can solve the anxiety that you feel as an entrepreneur. There are many unknown outcomes, but, you know, just sort of continue to trust in your team, trust in what you're doing, and sleep well. Oh, and one more thing. Take the vacation. You know, it's always easy to push off the vacation, but what I found is you can only burn the candle from both ends so long. Take the vacation, get yourself out, refresh, and get back into it and fight, fight, fight.
I love it. So, David, for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, I mean, drop me an email at david@federated.computer. That's FEDERATED.computer. I'd love to hear from people. And if you've got a great idea, or maybe you are a SaaS company, you're just starting, you're an entrepreneur yourself, we work with startup SaaS companies and we help them come to market with all the Federated customers that we have today. I'd love to be able to collaborate with you. And this has been great to be able to talk with you today, Alejandro.
Likewise, David. Thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.